Assalamualaikum, everyone. Thank you so much for being here with us at American Muslim Community Foundation. My name is Muhi Khwaja. Really excited to be here with you and share with you a little bit more about what AMCF does. And then we'll pass it over to our co-host at Saturna Capital, Monim Salam. And so just bear with us for a few moments, and we'll go through very briefly just some of the different services that AMCF offers so you have a better understanding. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. So we'd love to share the story of the poem Masalik al-Jinan, which is about the pathways to paradise. And the author of this is Sheikh Ahmadou Bamba from Senegal. He talks about one of those pathways to paradise being your charity. So everybody in this life wants to do good so that we can be in Jannah at the end of this life and as we begin the next life. And in those intermediary moments, it is said that people would wish that they could come back to this world to do some good deeds. So we love to think of our charitable giving as a sadaqa jariya, as something that continues on for us and that will continue to speak for us. And one of the ways of doing that is through donor advised funds, which we will talk briefly about. So for those unfamiliar with what a community foundation is, essentially is there to support the nonprofit community, the donor community, and we are operated by a board just like any other 501c3. And our vision is to lead sustainable and strategic Muslim philanthropy for today and future generations. Our mission is cultivating donor giving, diversifying funding to advance charitable causes. And we do that by being sacred, strategic, sustainable, collaborative, diverse, inclusive, and with integrity. This is also available on our website. So I'm not going to go in every slide over in detail, but just to give you an idea of some of our board members, advisory committee members, and staff as well. So my path to AMCF, I'm one of the co-founders and have been in the philanthropic and nonprofit space since 2009. But we started AMCF in 2016. We talked to hundreds of people across the country, found a group that wanted to be co-founders and work through a strategic plan. And all of those efforts over the last 7 years have now come to fruition in terms of what we've been able to accomplish with your support. We have over 165 donor advised funds that we manage. We manage over 15 endowments. We've distributed over $10 million in funding to nonprofit organizations, and we have just over $2 million of assets under management. And the services that we provide are donor advised funds. And a DAF is essentially, think of it like a charitable savings account. You get to put money in now, you get the tax benefit now, you can donate appreciated assets, and you get to then distribute those funds later on in life at your timetable. You can leave it for a loved one and pass it on generation to generation, or you can distribute it as part of your estate plan when you pass away. We also operate giving circles, which are a fantastic way for communities to give together to common causes and learn about other philanthropic projects. For the nonprofits, we host endowments, and some of you on the call have an endowment with us. So thank you so much for being our supporters and our clients. We really appreciate this and couldn't do this without you. So an endowment is for a nonprofit organization. It allows them to invest certain capital and receive a return on investment based on that principal gift that they start with. So it could be a variety of things such as real estate, but most commonly it is cash and stocks, and some people may put other assets into it as well. But primarily for the nonprofit organizations, we do a lot of nonprofit leadership development. So opportunities for leaders to learn best practices, implement them at their organizations, and just be a voice for them to talk about other challenges that they may be facing and how they can come to a solution at their organization. and relying on our network of hundreds of nonprofit organizations that we support to do that. We have a Muslim philanthropy podcast. I know Saturna has one as well. We'd love to have Munim and the team on our podcast and vice versa. We in the past have done professional development funds. We have our philanthropy awards coming up on November 18th. Thank you to Saturna for being a sponsor of that. We have hosted our Social Impact Accelerator, which nonprofit leaders can come and take classes. It is now asynchronous learning where you can purchase 16 webinars for $160 and get to learn all of that content at your own pace. And again, we do different webinars and consulting. And the Muslim Philanthropic Values are, for maybe you as a financial advisor, a really great way to talk to your clients about what drives and motivates families to give. Because when you're looking at that financial overall planning and your IRA and everything else involved and thinking about how much you need to live off of for the rest of your life, you also want to include charitable giving in that as well. So this Muslim Philanthropics Values is a way for families to think through some of those questions about impact and what they want to do. So at this point, I am going to pass it over to Munim, and we can talk more about donor advised funds and endowments if anybody has any questions at the end. But essentially, I will let Munim give an update on the stock market and a little bit more about Amana Mutual Funds and Saturna Capital. So thank you so much, Munim.
So yeah, actually, if we're going to be talking about Saturna Capital and Amana, let me start by letting Oase take over, and then I'll come back to you with the market update that might be.
And I'll do a nice introduction for Munim as well for the group here and for those watching later. So my name is Oase Dadaboy. I've been with Saturna Capital since 2008. I'm the director of Islamic investing and now the president of Saturna Trust Company. So the Amana Mutual Funds were started back in 1986. Many of you might have already been clients. We're glad to work with AMCF, and we have been for a few years now, to be able to partner together and offer the Amana Mutual Funds through the DAF, which is great. And we introduce other people to the DAF concept as well, because it is something that works for a good number of people. Saturna Trust Company is here in order to help people with their living trust, with their special needs trust, children's trust, asset protection trust, to be able to manage those trusts. So you can create a trust through an attorney, and then we're here for you to manage the trust document and the processes that need to be followed in an unemotional way, right? To just follow the letter of it and the spirit of it as well. So with that, now that you know about a little bit more about Saturna Capital and Saturna Trust, Munim might be known to many of you. He's been with the company since 2003. So when people think about Amana Mutual Funds, many of them think about Munim Salam. And even though the company's been around since 1986, Munim, you know, is the face of it in many ways for Amana Funds. So he is currently executive vice president, plays a role in many of the leadership decisions, and also is the portfolio manager for the first fund that was started in 1986, the Amana Income Fund, and also the Developing World Fund, which is an emerging markets fund. Spent 6 or 7 years in Malaysia running the Saturna Malaysia office. So with all of the experience, you know, there's a lot of good tactical and strategic things that he's learned along the way. And so today he's going to give us a market update for all of you to hear. Thank you. You're on mute.
Thanks, Oase, JazakAllah for that. And thanks everyone for joining. Like I said, I'm just going to go through just a few points and talk about, just an update, give you some drivers for the maybe short term and then some long term drivers that we're thinking about here at Saturna Capital when it comes to managing the money. So, kind of take a step back, right? We had, after last year when there was a down year for the markets, and then this year we had quite a rally for the first 6 months of the year, and then we basically continued that into July in the beginning of the quarter, and then it began to taper off a little bit. One thing to keep in mind, everything that happens in the market is basically, a lot of it is noise, what really drives markets in the long run is going to be what's called either fiscal policy or monetary policy. Monetary policy is actually determined by the Federal Reserve, whether they're raising interest rates or lowering them. And so, you know, we've had an unprecedented run, you know, let's supposing since 2008 all the way up till about, you know, 2019 or 21 actually, where the Fed had kept a very, very easy monetary policy, very, very low interest rates. They were pumping money into the economy. And so there was a lot of money to go around to be able to invest in the market. That changed. And so as the Fed was beginning to raise interest rates, they were also announcing they were going to pull back on the on the money that they were printing. That actually caused the market to go down. And that's really where you want to be able to think about, you know, what is it that's going to be the market driver? So, you know, the rally in the beginning of the year was basically set the stage because people were thinking that eventually the Fed will get done. It'll be a short, you know, interest rate rise environment, and then we'll be back to, you know, a good environment to dwell. However, you know, as the economy continued to be strong, as the inflation continued to be high, stubbornly high, the Fed began to hint that they were not going, they're not going to ease up on the pressure. They're going to keep raising rates. And even if they stop, it's going to be higher for longer. And really the higher for longer is where we ended up towards the end of August and September, when the markets realized that, you know, they might not be able to lower rates anytime soon. And so the market came down. That being said, in the you know, S&P just in the quarter alone, even though it's still up for the year at about 13% or so, it was down for the quarter at about 3.3%. And that also had ramifications on the global markets, right? MSCI World was down about roughly the same amount. Emerging markets did a little bit better, but really down a lot, down also about 2.9%. And what we had was this idea of higher for longer. The other thing that you know, is a driver of global markets is going to be China. And so, not, you know, the tensions between U.S. China never really eased up. You have a war going on in Ukraine and Russia, right? Because of that, growth rates in Europe have come down as well. And then now also in this environment in which you have U.S. China relations that are strained, you have a lot of information coming out of China with their economy is slowing down. Economy is slowing down because the real estate bubble, if you want to call it, in China is bursting, albeit slowly. So that's what's kind of the background. And, you know, for the quarter itself, we had information technology and healthcare that did really well. And then, you know, sectors like environment, industrials and consumer staples and materials were the ones that actually did underperform the market. We don't have any exposure, obviously, in the funds for the fund on the financial side, right? No banks or anything like that. But also, one thing to keep in mind is that we also don't have any oil and gas companies. And so in an environment where you have high oil prices, and then based on what's happened over the past weekend, you know, high oil prices going higher, that is something that we're not exposed to. And so that is something that might cause us to be able to go down in the future. So what does that lead to, right? We talked about, you know, a little bit about interest rates are going to be higher for longer. So inflation has been stubbornly high. You know, if Fed really likes to see that number at about 2%, it's trading higher than that. It's coming in higher than that. And so, you know, if the Fed continues to raise rates more than it has already done, which most likely it will do, that there's always the risk of a recession. Now, I think the market has already priced in a recession, but how deep of a recession it has not priced in. We think it's going to be fairly shallow, but you never know how things play out in the world. So as I mentioned to you, you know, one thing that we'll have to watch for is monetary policy. The other thing the market watches for is whether there's certainty or uncertainty. Uncertainty is never good for the markets. And then, you know, obviously we have geopolitical events that are going on, and those have ramifications on defense companies, oil and gas companies, you know, those type of things, of which we're not going to be involved in from that perspective. So those are some of the short drivers we're looking at between now and next year. Next year also, you have the U.S. elections that are going to be up. Typically speaking, that is going to be a volatile time, and it's a little more about headline risk. So you might see some, you know, when the Democrats come out and say, "Oh, we're gonna do really, you know, we're gonna crack down on farmer school prices," then obviously the drug companies do poorly, and then a couple of weeks later, nobody's talking about it, so then they begin to rally back up again. So you're going to see that a lot of that headline risk that's going to come into play. And then, you know, we are long-term investors. Whenever we buy things, we're looking for long-term trends and the companies that are going to be benefiting from that. A lot of our average turnover ratio in the funds is in single digits, and that means so we don't buy and sell companies maybe once every 5 years or so. And so we are looking for those bigger trends that are out there is what's going to be driving. And what we're finding is that it's going to be, you know, driven by Internet of Things, right? Big data, which is where the storage and those type of things are involved. And then also artificial intelligence. Those are the areas that we're looking at that are going to be drivers of the future. And when you're thinking about, you know, AI, big data, IoT, smart vehicles, all of these things, it's really all about the computing power, right? Can we develop faster chips, smaller chips to be able to put in devices that will give you their the answers as fast as possible? And so that's why we're very, very bullish in the longer term. And there will be ups and downs in the short term, but in the long term on the chip manufacturers and the area behind chips, semiconductor chips. The second area where we're seeing a lot of growth, and particularly after the IRA Act that was signed last year, right? It was called the Inflation Reduction Act. Trust me, it had nothing to do with inflation and nothing to do with reduction. Basically, a lot of it had to do with putting money into bringing manufacturing back to the U.S., but also at the same time to be able to make, it was a green bill, basically. So it was putting money towards retrofitting your buildings to make them greener. Talking about climate change and how do we restructure infrastructure to be able to make it green as well. So those are things that are going to have long-term ramifications on certain companies that can take advantage of that. So for example, whether it be we're talking about a company called Eaton, which we own the portfolio, or Johnson Controls, or even Schneider, those are companies that actually do provide these services to be able to either they're doing the, you know, HVACs, or they're providing consulting services to do these things to make these companies greener. And that's where the government has said they're going to be stepping in and actually helping to do that. And the last thing that I wanted to mention as far as long-term drivers, and then I'll open up for questions, is really the aging population in the developed world. That is a trend that's going to continue. And so we have to be watching for it. And the entire life cycle for the past 60 years or so has all been dependent upon the baby boom generation. As they were coming into the workforce, there were ramifications. As they had babies, there were ramifications. As those babies went to college, there were ramifications. All of these things are happening. And now this baby boom generation is actually beginning to retire. And so that is when the Fed talks about the unemployment rate being persistently low and how do you move it, one thing to keep in mind is that between now and 2034, there will be 500,000 people that are retiring that are not going to be coming back to the workforce. And so why is unemployment stubbornly low? Because you're basically losing half a million people out of the workforce. And so there's a lot of demand for jobs that's out there. And so that is a trend that we have to watch. That has ramifications on healthcare, on consumer discretionary, has ramifications on these things. So we're watching these trends to make sure that we're best positioned in our portfolio to be able to take advantage of those. So I'll stop here. I didn't get into specific returns of the portfolios because you can easily pull that up on the website. But I would be happy to take any questions that anybody had. And I'll pause here.
Thank you so much for all of those insights, Monim. In terms of, you know, the specific, I'll just start off hopefully with one that may be relevant for folks who have endowments with us, donor advised funds with us, primarily at AMCF. You know, we have our portfolio with you all, and in the institutional shares for the growth fund and income, what would you say, and I know you guys release the historical performance and everything like that, for people who've been with us 2 years, 1 year, you know, with the ups and downs in the market, is the advice generally always like just, you know, long-term focus? Or because we also do distributions, right? So our endowments, we try to give them back a minimum percentage every year. In terms of what you've seen in the last year or 2 years, any advice for nonprofits that have endowments?
So thank you for that question. I mean, I think so. The one, two things to keep in mind. There's one thing, which is the endowment itself. And the other thing would be the conversation you have about your own DAF and what you want to do with it as far as distributions is concerned. So if your goal, and I'll lump in, if your goal is long-term and you're not going to be distributing for a little while, you're going to keep it in there, let it grow, and then do it maybe after you pass away, or endowments, right? Those have a lot more longer time horizon than maybe something you say, you know, every year I'm going to be distributing some money to charities and that type of thing. So number one, and when you look at an endowment, you know, when financial planners look at you know, how they want to allocate your portfolio, they're going to look at, well, what is your end date, right? When do you retire? When do you go to college? All of those things. When do you, they even have to factor in when you pass away based on mortality numbers in the US. So what is the end date for an endowment? There isn't one. Endowments are supposed to be there forever. And so it really does factor into having much more of a, you know, even a longer long-term view than any kind of, you know, either human or in or any other portfolio that you might have. That being said, so, you know, should it be more geared towards growth? Probably. And the short-term fluctuations should be even more used as an opportunity to put more money into the endowments as well. Same thing happens with the long-term DAFs that you might have. In the short term, right? I mean, one thing to keep in mind is at end of September, with all the volatility that's been going on in the markets last year and then this year, the income fund, for example, institutional shares are up about 18.9%, right? And so, and the growth fund, I think, is might be even higher. I haven't checked that yet, but it's about 19%. And so, you know, if your long-term goal is to be able to average out about an 8% rate of return, then take some of the money that you have that's icing on the cake, which is above that 8%, and reinvest it so that, you know, you'll have an opportunity to be able to, if the market does go down, be able to take money out of it as well. So I do think that if you're taking money out now, be more conservative, right? But I do think that if you're much longer term, then be a little bit more towards growth than income. The one last thing that I will say, right? When I talked about, and I'm going to come back to what I talked about when it came to higher for longer, which is talking about interest rates in the U.S. economy. We've, again, a lot of us have not experienced a longer term market where interest rates are higher, right? And so when that happens, when you have low interest rate for a long time, all the growth companies end up doing really well, which is what's happened in the past 15 years, right? what you're going to find is that that's not going to be an easy path anymore. And so it makes it more important to have a lot more diversification than maybe you might have had in the past, let's say 15 years or so. So that you have to keep that in mind also.
I appreciate that. And then can you clarify why you said if it's an 18% growth, choosing 8% and putting the other 10% back, is that just for still being able to take 8%, or why not 5 or 10, or why specifically the 8?
Oh, I just threw that number out there. It really depends on your goals as to what, right, how much you want to distribute. So it could be 5%, it could be less, sure, it could be more, right? But I guess my point was is that if you have more of a higher rate of return that the market gives you or your portfolio gives you, you know, don't go out there and spend all of it.
Right.
Like, save it for the years when market might dip and you still want to be able to make those donations.
Yeah, I think, you know, AMCF maybe opened our own endowment in 2019. And I think this is the first year that we're going to be taking something out. So, you know, we've held on to it for the last 4 years and it's come to our advantage at this time where now we can use some of that extra cash.
Correct.
So I know, you know, Ali, Mohim, Yusuf, Rehan, we have you on. So if you have any questions that you want to ask live of myself or Awais or Monim, feel free to ask.
Assalamu alaikum.
Couple of questions, Rehman and now. I did start a couple of endowment funds for a school that I was a treasurer at, and then also a masjid in my community.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, we've only been investing in the growth fund. But is there any plans to bring in any other new funds to apart from the income and the food?
So thank you for the question. So right now we have actually four funds that we have. So we have the growth fund, which is basically capital growth, right? Income, which is equity income.
Mm-hmm.
Developing world, which is not actually international, is actually more developing world. And so it's a little bit more riskier possibly than in a global or an international fund. And then the last one we have is a participation fund, which is a Sukuk fund. Sukuk basically is, its function is very similar to an fixed income product. So those are the four we have. You can make a good allocation from there. We have some plans to think about what different funds. If you have any suggestions, that would be great. But we are thinking about other funds to be able to add to the mix that would provide a benefit to the client, but will be different than the funds that we have right now. Did you have anything did you have any thoughts on that? Or
No, because I'm looking at it like it from so that was a question I was going to ask from my the endowment accounts that I manage. But
yeah,
on the other hand, I was just thinking about me personally. I mean, I'm 55 years old. I mean, I have 100% of my equity is in growth funds.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's with Amana or Fidelity or whoever it might be, everything is in there. And as we move from or as we age or as I go towards retirement, what we were looking from an Islamic investment perspective or something to more like a balanced fund that like the other companies have, where you mix some of the sukuks with growth investments, so where there is a little, I mean, that is where I'm looking for diversification. Right now, my diversification at 55 seems to be, let's go from large growth to maybe a dividend stock strategy, just because I cannot go into anything else apart from stock with respect to equity. So that is what I was hoping that Amana or Satina would bring along, those kind of funds along, where I could also, instead of having four different funds, maybe a retirement, a target fund kind of a thing, where as I age, the allocations keep on differing. And is there any plans for those kind of things down the line?
So I think I'm not sure about a target day fund. We have talked about it in the past. It didn't make sense for us just from a perspective of fees for the client itself. However, that being said, I do think that you can work with us to be able to come up with the right allocation that will include like the Sukuk fund or in developing world or income fund, to be able to get a little bit away from the growth side and maybe a little bit more conservative as you get older and older. So that is something that we can help you with.
But for that, would I have to sign up as an individual, a separate account, or Hidenet individual kind of an account? Or
No. We can definitely help you with that if somehow you can get us your contact information.
Okay. I will.
Yeah. Then we can do that.
Okay. Thanks.
Great. And we're happy to pass on your information, Mohim, if that's easier to Munim and team. Okay. Last call for any questions. If not, we're happy to you know, wrap a little bit early, but want to make sure that you take advantage of the expertise of Monim and Awais here.
Quick question. This is Abhi. In the real estate sector, I know maybe the REITs are some individual holdings in part of the portfolio, maybe, but then just overall, what's your view on the real estate sector from an economy point of view?
Hey, Ellie, good to hear from you. Thanks for the fun. Thanks for the question. If I understood your question, because there's a little bit of background, I mean, a little echo, you're asking about REITs and the view on the real estate sector, correct?
Yes, just broadly.
Yeah, okay. Sure. Okay. And that's one of the areas that we're looking into, is whether or not we can actually, you know, create a portfolio of real estate. I do think, you know, look, let's be honest, real estate is very dependent upon interest rates. And so over the past 2 or 3 years, very similar to fixed income, it's been a terrible investment because interest rates have been going higher. But at a certain point, you are going to get valuations coming down, and it's going to become fairly cheap for us to do that because interest rates are not going to be high forever. It might be for longer, but not forever. And so even in an environment of high rates, people can adjust and companies can adjust to do that. So our issue is not about the real estate sector, which I think is becoming very, very attractive. It's more about finding the right companies in the sector that we can invest in. The reason why is because the majority of the real estate it actually has fairly high leverage, right? I mean, companies have leverage anyway, so that's, I'm not going to say they have leverage, but it's really about they have very high leverage. A lot of them are, you know, from our criteria basis, we have to be less than 33%, and they're up there in the 80, 90, sometimes even double, even over 100% leveraged from that perspective. So finding the right mix of real estate investment trusts and just real estate companies is a lot more challenging. To give you an idea, we have, in order to do one, we'd probably have to look global rather than just in the US, just be able to find the number of names that we can do. We do have a universe now that we're monitoring closely. We do private mandates for those, and they're doing well relative to the market. But finding the names is challenging, but not impossible. And so we might be in the future that we might see a little bit more news from us about real estate sector.
I think just one more, maybe. In addition to what Brother Mukim was saying, I think there's a lot of, obviously, given the interest rates where they are right now, so the cash has become attractive. And I think that's where people are, from a Sharia compliant point of view, trying to find options where they can keep their short-term money, but then not get exposed to the market's volatility. So I think that something like that, I don't know where to find it, of course. Maybe, you know, in Sukuk's is the only other side to look at, but I think that's one area where I see some addition from a Sharia compliant point of view to be done into the portfolio.
Yeah, thank you for that. So that is something also, again, that we are looking into. I think we're on the same page when it comes to that is something that the clients want. So I'm presenting huge challenges. We are looking for ways to come around it, but just kind of give you an idea. The cash alternative or money market fund is something we're looking into. We are running into obstacles when it comes to the official SEC definition of what a money market fund is. You know, hopefully we're going to be working around those things. But again, this is both real estate and the area of short-term Sukuk or money market is something we're looking into very seriously to be able to see if we can come up with a product, right? It's one thing to come up with a product and get the demand for it, but you also have to have a supply of securities to be able to buy in that product. And so we have to kind of match both of those things and then lay on top of that it has to be something that our regulator has to approve as well. So we are working through those things, and hopefully, inshallah, sooner rather than later, we'll be making some announcements.
I thank you for all you do. I think that's the only conclusion I can say.
Our pleasure. Thanks for your confidence. And actually, everybody on the call, thank you for your continued support and confidence and really being ambassadors for us, because I know that a lot of our shareholders more than being shareholders, are ambassadors for our funds. And so I really appreciate that.
Great. Well, again, thank you to Saturna, Amana Funds, Aways, Monim, and everybody else who was able to join. We'll put this up in our recordings on our website. It'll be on YouTube. So for those who weren't able to join, they'll still be able to take advantage of this. And we hope to do this every, you know, at least twice a year, if not quarterly, and just kind of do these updates for those who have donor advised funds and endowments with us and people who are interested in learning more. So on behalf of American Muslim Community Foundation, thank you so much for joining today.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Take care, everyone.